Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. Already an exciting morning here in the Crescent City. The announcement of Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks will perform at the Superdome in New Orleans this fall in October. Only one of five cities announced within this country where they will play together. So I'm already looking forward to it. Great news. We come off the successful execution of so many different things relative to the Super Bowl. And speaking of the Super Bowl, during that week, there was a very exciting announcement. Archie Manning's going to join us, legendary Saints quarterback, and Lou Fregoso, CEO of Children's Hospital, where a transformational gift by the Manning family to Children's Hospital, Archie being my favorite Saints quarterback of all time. Can't wait. I hadn't talked to him in a while. Look forward to hearing from him. At 11:10, we'll begin our coverage of the announcement of the new head coach, Kellen Moore. He was the offensive coordinator at with the Philadelphia Eagles. Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak and also Bobby Hebert. We'll talk about what this means. This is a big move for the Saints, obviously. Been looking around for a coach. The last team without one to actually sign one, which is very interesting as well. They were very patient and deliberate, it seems, in their process. We'll talk to the experts about that at 11:10. And in the 12 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Rafael Goyeneche. A lot to talk about. The successes from a security standpoint of the Super Bowl, the latest on NOPD promotions that were paused, and a utilization of facial recognition in the French Quarter, which has been a force multiplier as they develop their strategies and how to deal with some of the challenges within the French Quarter, especially for big events. And obviously, this weekend, a lot of parades are starting out. So we jump from one big event to another big event. We're off and running, and we're just a few weeks away from Mardi Gras, and the city will be buzzing again. And talking about buzzing, the DOJ announced yesterday that they're suing New York Governor Hochul and Attorney General Letitia James over immigration policies. The newly installed Attorney General Pam Bondi announced that yesterday as a result of some of the activities by the state of New York relative to their treatment of federal authorities on immigration enforcement. They have refused to honor civil detainers, civil warrants authorized by Congress. They've eliminated the means for federal immigration officials to carry out their statutory functions, according to the complaint. And it seems as though they've had enough. Pam Bondi says New York has chosen to prioritize illegal aliens over American citizens. Pam Bondi also stopped DOJ funding for 60 days to sanctuary cities and states. You know, it's interesting. If you want to be that, that's fine. But don't turn to the federal government to finance it, which is exactly what the state of New York did. So they decided unilaterally that they wanted to be a sanctuary state. Many cities within the state wanted to be sanctuary cities, and then they turned to the federal government to finance same. Well, these are your choices. Pull on your resources. Drain your resources. Face your voters for a decision that you wanted to make. Don't turn to the federal government for assistance. When they're trying to turn to you for a little bit of help, you turn them down. And in fact, you pass laws restricting. Now, what's going to be real interesting in this litigation, and it was Jonathan Turley made a point about this many times over the past several days. He's a George Washington University law professor, a constitutional expert. He talks about this New York law and what it provides. And when I heard it for the first time, I kind of could not believe it. I had to go see it. There's actually a tip-off provision in the New York law, right? So this is how this works. If there's an individual in jail, for example, this is just one way it can work, and the federal authorities call the jail officials to find out if they know what the status is of that particular individual, immigration status, that is, of that particular individual in that facility. Those individuals within that jail are allowed under New York law to tell that individual that the federal authorities have inquired about their status, basically tipping them off that the federal authorities have an interest in that individual, right? So what does that individual do? If he's in jail, once he's released, he leaves the area, obviously. He doesn't want to get caught. And he knows that they're asking questions. Same of if the questions were asked of DMV, if they know the status. Because in New York, they actually passed a law that allowed illegals to get a driver's license. And it just goes on and on and on. You know, the interesting thing, if you were a citizen and you tipped off a defendant or someone that was being looked for by the federal government, you would be charged with obstruction of justice, aiding and abetting a felon or otherwise if they had a record, or if it was a felony case they were working on. You see how this has been working? I've talked about this for a long time, about this. We're creating this special class for those that have actually come to this country illegally. We're engaged in an overreach in order to provide protections to perpetuate one's own ideological bent from allowing federal authorities to actually enforce the law. And there doesn't seem to be an end. And then there's a desire or a hope by state and locals that the federal government's actually going to finance this silliness that they're engaged in. Separate and apart from this issue, just at first blush, think about the danger that it imposes to our federal agents. It makes it more difficult for them to try and locate these individuals, and when they do, those individuals already know that the feds are looking for them. They don't tell the feds that they tipped this individual off. No, we wouldn't want to put them on the same level or at the same status as an illegal immigrant. No, to the contrary, we want to create a benefit for those to try and escape and thwart the efforts of the federal government. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, right after Donald Trump was elected, both of these individuals, Hochul and Letitia James, went out there saying that they were going to do everything they could possibly do to thwart the federal authorities in this endeavor. Our own city here has been a sanctuary city. In fact, when asked the other day of Jason Williams, I mean, he talked around it. It was a bunch of gobbledygook about whether or not there was going to, you know, we would retreat off of this, embracing this. And I'm not exactly sure what he said. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. Obviously, didn't want to answer it straight up. 80-something percent of the folks in this country are in favor of deporting criminals. Why would we want them? Why would we want to keep them? Why would this be a good idea for any of us? It's really interesting how this is ultimately playing out. And we're having to beat back on these states because they're looking to the federal government for funds to support their silly propositions. of protecting those that are in this country illegally. So I tip my hat to this administration. Don't send them any money. Freeze the grants. You have the power of the purse. They want to try and stare you down? They can't. You're bigger than them. I'm all about states' rights. You can't compel them to get involved, but they should not step in your way. In the moment in time that they start passing bills, legislative acts, to stand in the way of the federal government in the enforcement of laws passed by Congress, defund them. Then they'll think twice about standing in the way. Simply defund them. Don't send them any more money. I'm tired of hearing the crying. You know, it's interesting what we're seeing play out right now, too. We create not-for-profits in this country. And these not-for-profits, most people think that they're out there soliciting funds and, you know, getting donors to support their activities, and that maybe some of the programs that they are involved in are actually financed by state or local government or the federal government. What we're finding out right now, as more and more begin to complain because of the funds being frozen, is that a large number of not-for-profits are completely and totally financed by your tax dollars. By your tax dollars. It's amazing to me how many are coming to the forefront, going to the podium and saying, if we don't get the federal dollars, we're bankrupt. We can't exist. You have to ask the question, why are we funding not only the services that are in line with the same mission of these not-for-profits and the not-for-profits as well? I've been a big advocate of it. I have them on my show every Tuesday about the services that they provide. They fill the gaps of what government can't provide. And I guess I've been a little naive, but I don't know how many of these are fully funded by the federal government. This is absolute craziness. We are creating a complete system with nothing but waste because the administrative cost, we're paying 2, 3, 4, 5x to manage these dollars that come down from the federal government. It is nuts. And I'm sure that we have the same situation with the state. And I'm positive that the same thing is going on with local government. We're creating an entire employment culture out there that's being independently financed by the federal government. So not only do we have the bureaucracy that we're hearing about, who are making decisions and financing silly things. These are silly people financing silly things all around the world. But we're also financing the administrative state of not-for-profits. And that's something that has to be seriously looked upon. There was someone, and I forgot the name of the not-for-profit, it was out on the West Coast somewhere. Well, I think it was out of Colorado, where the individual said 100% of the funding and financing of this not-for-profit is federal dollars. Really? And that because of this, we're going to have to shut our doors. But we ought to seriously look at what the administrative state of that not-for-profit is, what the costs are, who are we financing, who are we funding, and for what purpose. And is there an opportunity to streamline? Are there other organizations that are bigger than that have a much healthier blend of revenue that comes into their organization? It's not 100% reliant on federal $1,000. And we wonder why we have a $36 trillion debt out there and why inflation is where it is in this country. We are funding and financing too much because it's easy. You get on the federal tit, you don't ever get off. And that's the other thing that's very interesting, is there's never really an accountability taken of any of this. Once you get into the stream of federal financing, unless from day one that there's an end date on that particular grant, and even then, it seems as though some are able to get continuation grants in perpetuity. So who's mining the store? Who's looking at whether or not they're appropriately spending the dollars? Well, the classic example is just looking at a governmental agency of USAID. There was testimony this morning of a former USAID high-level ranking individual that said, it's a mess. It's been a mess for a long time. It doesn't align with the best interests of this country. Not now, not ever. The manner in which we're spending those dollars is on a completely different mission and vision as it relates to our foreign policy. So we're spending money in countries that actually we're promoting socialism to fight communism. And we wonder why we find ourselves in the predicament that we are a contradiction on so many levels with our foreign policy. And you've heard this historically over and over and over again, when you have your own government agencies working at cross purposes with one another. And then we find out about, and this is the most incredible thing ever, we find out about caves in Pennsylvania where they are storing pension records and processing federal pension requests when you retire manually. And the average last year was that they were only approving and being able to manually get this through the system monthly, a little over 7,000 requests. The number of requests coming in monthly is greater than that number. We're not even automated. We're talking about right now that we are going to be the leader in AI, that we are one of the most innovative, technologically advanced countries in the world, and we are manually processing retirement requests and payments in a cave in Pennsylvania. And we're paying Iron Mountain to do so. They own it. We're paying them for the right of access to this mine, former mine, to store our records and have a manual process set up to deal with retirements. You have got to be kidding me. This is a joke. How does this go on for so long and nobody ever finds out about it? No one. It's never been talked about. You look at these members of Congress that sit on these oversight committees, and they look like a deer in the headlights. They can't believe what they're saying. And meanwhile, you have commentators in some of the liberal media saying, well, you know, the Trump administration's talking about this, but they're not bringing the receipts. Well, they brought video. They brought video of that situation. That is a complete, total embarrassment. That's what you would expect in a third world country. And we wonder why we should fear the Chinese. You put all this to this jambalaya of this ideological warfare that we're involved in is that we're going to be able to employ everybody in this country within the confines of the federal government. It's all good. In fact, there are those inside the Beltway that feel like the more federal employees we have, the better off we are. The more people we can put on the federal tit, the happier everybody is. It's all good. It's all about power. It's all about control. But never is it a conversation about how to best spend your money. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with
you. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Archie Manning, legendary Saints quarterback, and Lou Fregosa, CEO of Children's Hospital, to talk about a exciting announcement the other day of a transformational gift given by the Manning family to Children's Hospital. And just as an aside, Archie Manning is my favorite quarterback ever of the Saints. He is, in my view, a true gentleman, a credible ambassador for the city of New Orleans, never lets us down, and we truly appreciate it. Archie and Lou, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning.
Thank you for having us. Thanks for having Archie, us, and I appreciate those comments.
Archie, it's been a long time since I've seen you. I think the last time was at a restaurant on St. Charles Avenue. How are things going?
Doing okay. Of course, busy time last week for a lot of folks here in New Orleans. It was a great week for New Orleans. Just really gives me a lot of pride to read the all the compliments and nice things were said by people from outside the city about the job that New Orleans did for the Super Bowl. So we were busy. We got the weekend started on a good note, Neil, with our Children's Hospital night on Wednesday night. It was a fun night. It was a great night for our family, and we're just so excited to be associated with this wonderful institution.
So, Archie, how did this come about? I mean, obviously, you guys could give to anyone. You've been great, as I said, a credible ambassador to the city of New Orleans. What was the thought process?
Well, we've had a long time association with healthcare. I think it's been 17 years ago. It's after they won when Indianapolis won their Super Bowl that we dedicated up in Indianapolis the Peyton Manning Children's Hospital. Although he lives in Denver, he is still attached and involved in this. It's a wonderful hospital. It's part of the Ascension St. Vincent's family up there. Matter of fact, I'm going to Indianapolis this week for his 17th annual gala. Big night. He always has a country music singer in from Nashville, and just they have a big gala to raise money for his hospital. Eli kind of followed that note, Neil, and he wanted to do something in Mississippi since he grew up in New Orleans, but he played college football in Mississippi, and I think it was in 2000, gosh, I can't remember, maybe 17, we dedicated the Eli Manning Children's Clinics. And it's part of the University of Mississippi Medical Center. That's the Ole Miss Med School there in Jackson. And that was a wonderful event for our family. Eli and Abby went on to co-chair a $100 million campaign for Children's Hospital there at the Ole Miss Med Center. So we're kind of attached. Olivia and I established back in 2017, the Manning Family Fund, also part of the University of Mississippi Medical Center, just to help health care and improve health care throughout our home state of Mississippi. So Cooper and I just, with other people being involved, I kidded last week, Cooper and I decided we needed to be in the children's hospital business. And no better partners and no better people to be involved with right here in New Orleans.
No doubt. I think, Archie, you would agree that a city needs a proactive, vibrant, legitimate, adolescent healthcare system in order to survive. And Children's Hospital obviously fits that bill, right?
Well, Lou can tell you, you know, it's kind of just an honor for us, but it's just appropriate. 70th birthday coming up of Children's Hospital. And, of course, you know, a lot of people remember it was called Crippled Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. They maybe at some point didn't think that was the best name for it, but it was in 1955. And it's interesting to me to read about the initial years. Lou can tell you more about it. Of course, polio was a factor in those early years. Lou can tell you more about that.
Yeah, that's right, Archie.
So, Lou, talk to us. Obviously, a transformational gift by the Manning family. The branding of the Manning family just alone. I mean, I guess for lack of a better term, the blue sky value of that is huge. Oh. For you guys, as I said, Archie's been a really credible ambassador for our city. Tell us about this opportunity.
Well, thanks, Nolan. Great to talk to you, Archie. And I think, like Archie said, they've been longtime supporters of Children's Hospital New Orleans and now Manning Family Children's. And I think they really asked, like, how do we help? And if you think about what Archie just said, we're turning 70 years old. 70 years of giving back to this community, lifting it up, and every great city has a great children's hospital, and New Orleans has that in us. And I think as we talked about our next chapter and how do we really help change the health of a generation, that's really where this conversation got started, is how do the two great Louisiana legacies, Children's Hospital New Orleans and the Manning family, come together to really help kids. And ultimately, all this was about was helping kids, and that's one of the things I loved about Archie and Olivia and the whole family, is that's where their mindset was. Like, how do we help you tell this story? Because you're doing amazing things there. And how do we help get the story out across the entire state, the region, and nationally, for that matter, because we have national-leading programs that can become a gold standard. You know, the last time we talked, we really talked about how we were changing our healthcare model from being what I call a sick care model to a well care model. You know, stop being reactive and get out in the community to actually reach kids where they're at, to help them before they decompensate and end up in the ER. And I think that's another piece that I think really differentiates us, that Archie and Olivia really gravitated to, is the work that we do out in the community. We're across 180 schools, 100,000 kids. We started one of the largest, most comprehensive behavioral health programs in the country. We're one of five children's hospitals in the country that has access to a cure for sickle cell disease. As you know, we take care of the most kids with sickle cell in our hospital. And we've been the one and only freestanding comprehensive children's hospital for the great state of Louisiana for 70 years. And as we think about the next chapter, you know, who better to partner with than the Mannings, Archie and Olivia, you know, Cooper, Peyton, Eli, the whole family, just to help get the word out on the amazing work that's being done here.
Lou, you will also recall that I was completely shocked by the breadth and depth of the programs that are offered by you guys. I thought I knew Children's, and I come to find out I was totally ignorant. I didn't really know Children's, and I think that would probably be the same for others. But, you know, what's interesting about at this time, this gift by the Manning family, timing is everything. Big changes in healthcare. A lot of uncertainty in healthcare, and it's going to take transformational gifts like this one and others to keep our system alive and well. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. I think one of the things this does, right, is for families, it's so important to really know where to get care. And they need to know the difference between a comprehensive freestanding children's hospital and just your regular old boutique department of pediatrics run by an adult hospital. What we do here is different, to your point. We have these comprehensive programs where we're leading in behavioral health, trauma and grief, cancer and blood disorders, sickle cell, Thrive Kids. The list goes on. We're the only hospital in the entire state that has pediatric dermatology, rheumatology, pediatric nephrology, all of that. That's what it means to be a comprehensive children's hospital. Families need to know that. A lot of times things are getting marketed out there as pediatric health care, and they don't know what they don't know. And one of the things the Mannings are going to help us with is just make sure everybody understands what's happening here, the breadth and the scope of what we do, why this place is different, why Louisiana and New Orleans has a treasure in Manning Family Children's right here. And again, just to make sure that people understand, when you need pediatric health care, go to pediatric specialists. Don't go to an adult hospital that has a pediatric program. These people have trained their entire lives to do what they do, and all the programs that we have in every specialty, that's what it means to be a comprehensive children's hospital. It has every specialty, every service that a child needs for that wraparound care. So I think that's why I'm just so proud to be with Archie and Olivia and the family, and for them to help us tell this story and tell it loud and proud across the state, the region, and the entire country.
You know, Lou, when I look at what Archie and his family have done from afar, and Archie, I got to tell you, it just looks to me like y'all have fun in everything you do. And I got to imagine you bring that same, lighthearted approach to this. It's going to be fun. And I can tell it's going to be fun. When you talk about those other activities that are going on in Indianapolis and in Mississippi and stuff, it's all about fun, right?
It really is, Neil. That's something we try to do. Olivia and I have been so blessed. Our three boys have brought us so much joy. We have nine grandkids now. And Neil, I point out, we have nine healthy grandchildren. And I thank God every day. I tell people, everyone should take an afternoon or something and find a reason, maybe, to visit a children's hospital, because it's just good for you. It's good for your mind. It's good for your heart. It's nothing sadder to me than to see a sick child. And then always when I'm there at a children's hospital, of course you see the parents and you meet the parents, yeah. The grandparents. I relate to that, and it's just so satisfying to be part of something. And Livy and I and the boys, probably the most impressive thing, we knew a lot of board members at Children's, or I'm not used to saying Manning Children's yet, but we knew a lot of the boys, so they're a wonderful board. But the leadership team there, beginning with Lou, is as strong as anything I've ever seen. So once again, it's been a great week. I don't ask for this, but I cannot go anywhere without a dozen people coming up to me and thanking me. This is in the last five or six days, so it's a wonderful feeling.
When you love New Orleans, it'll love you right back, and we truly appreciate all that you've done for the city. Archie, I just have one thing I want to say. I was a little disappointed. I was hoping you would participate in the field goal competition. I think you would have won it.
It wasn't the most impressive thing. I hadn't even talked to Peyton about that, but I think he spent a lot of time practicing. I think that day Eli actually had
it didn't show.
He caught the flu here Saturday, and I don't think he warmed up. He said Peyton took 20 practice kicks. He hit them pretty good, but then when he got in the competition, it didn't go so good. So he should stick to throwing and or doing whatever he does, not kicking.
Well, my money would have been on you, my friend.
They're not going to get a 75-year-old out there to kick. I'm going to make that statement right now. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate you always being that ambassador for our great city. Thank you, thank you, thank you to you and your entire family. We really appreciate it. And Lou, congratulations to you as well. These types of gifts are so meaningful to the mission and the vision that you have at Children's Hospital.
Amen.
Have a great weekend, folks, and thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much,
you guys.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. On the text line, it says, the city embraced Archie when the Saints drafted him. Archie has never stopped returning the favor. What an amazing man. And his kids aren't bad either. You know what I love about all of them? They're just all very self-deprecating. They kind of make fun of themselves, and they have a lot of fun with it. You know, right away you heard Archie talking about, you know, maybe his own weakness, as it relates to kicking and this and that and everything else. And they just have a blast. And it's fun to watch, the three boys just having fun, ribbing one another and being able to do so many things with what they've been able to earn in life and giving back. I mean, when you just heard the story that Archie told of so many different healthcare facilities for children, being helped out by the Manning Family Fund in both up in Indianapolis and Mississippi, and now here, right at home, his kind of adopted home, I would feel safe in saying, the city of New Orleans. And he's always been that credible ambassador and a true gentleman, always. I mean, and that's what I love about Archie Manning. It's bigger than just being a football player, in my view, and my admiration, actually, of him. So we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Okay, folks, after the top of the hour news break, when we come back, we'll visit with Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, and Bobby Hebert leading up to the 11:30 press conference where New Orleans Saints owner Gail Benson and Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis will introduce their new head coach, Kellen Moore. So we'll be right back. Stay with us.